you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the Libertarian Tupac, most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith, and he is the king of the cocks, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? How you doing?
Nothing much. How was your Jersey weekend?
It was very good. Very good. Can't complain. How about yourself?
I did nothing.
There you go. Well, you also can't complain. Well, you know when you won't be doing nothing? This summer at Porkfest.
Hell yeah.
That's where you'll be doing something.
Last chance to get, they're actually selling out, which is pretty cool. It's because the Meacocks have taken this thing over. We've got everyone coming out in force. And when the king of the cocks lays down his carpet, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying.
No, it's go with it. I was like inspired. I got goosebumps coming up. No, but it is true that the event is about to sell out. So if you want to come see us at Porkfest this summer, me and Rob will be doing a live stand-up show and a live podcast. So make sure you get tickets now, because you won't be able to if you don't get
them. And a lot of our crew of regulars are up there this year. Gene Epstein's up there. I think Tom Woods is up there. Mm-hmm. I think Scott Horden's going to be up there. So represent.
Yeah, a lot of good people. It's going to be a real fun time. Make sure you're a part of it. As you kind of alluded to, the Mises Caucus has really taken over the New Hampshire Libertarian Party. There's always been a lot of good libertarians in New Hampshire, of course, and so it's a lot of excitement going on up there. And I'm very much looking forward to meeting a lot of good people. We had a great time last time we were at Porkfest, so should be fun again. There's a lot of exciting things happening in the Libertarian Party with the Mises Caucus. They've been having a lot of success at the state conventions that have been going on, and I'm really pumped about it, really excited for some of the stuff. Of course, I'm going to be speaking at their event in Pittsburgh, which is coming up on May 15th. I'll be speaking there. I know Jeff Dice is going to be speaking, and Michael Rechtenwald. It's going to be a real great event. So make sure you come to that as well if you can. Also, I'll be at Freedom Fest hosting the whole thing this summer. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We were supposed to do that last year, but you know, the whole COVID regime decided it was illegal. But this year we will be doing Freedom Fest, and I'm really looking forward to that. So yeah, there you go. All right, look at that, plugs up top. Very nice. Okay, so there's a few things I wanted to talk about. One story particularly that caught my eye, and I know caught yours as well, Rob. I was thinking about it in the context of a lot of things. Like one of the major themes of this show that I've just been kind of relentlessly obsessed with over the last year has been the kind of the corporate woke takeover of the left, and that I've been arguing that this is essentially a neoliberal corporate plot to take over the left-wing movement in America rather than a left-wing plot say, to take over the neoliberal corporate, rule in this country. And the last episode, I had Ben Burgess on, who just wrote a book with, you know, not exactly that thesis, but that goes over a lot of the same things. It's a critique of the left from the left, very critical of cancel culture and wokeism and things like that. And I thought it was a really interesting conversation that we had. It's just interesting to hear the perspective of like a good leftist who sees all of this stuff happening and has to realize that so much of this stuff that's coming out of what's considered the left is just not actually helping your cause. Like, you're not actually getting closer. You know, I think it's very easy for libertarians and right wingers, for both of us, to see, say, like, big government and go, well, big government means the leftists are winning because we don't like big government and they do. Or to see anything that comes out of the left and go, see, look, the left is winning. If there's any type of leftist thought, then if that's dominant, well, then obviously they're winning. But in the same way that, like, say there might be some people, there might be some people that consider me and you right wingers, right? Like, to a hardcore socialist, they'd consider a free market type like you, Rob, you're a right winger to them. But they'd also consider, you know, I don't know, a neo-Nazi a right winger, right? So, like, if a neo-Nazi starts getting his policies put into place, would that, if that left winger was like, see, Rob's winning, you'd be like, wait, what? No, not at all. Rob's like in serious danger. He's a free market Jew. They don't do too well in Nazi takeovers. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of be precise about what strain of leftism is winning, what is actually happening, and who is actually winning and who's losing. And it's not so clear that just broad brush, it's like, well, if you're for big government, then you're winning. It's like, okay, but if the concern of a leftist was that there's so much corporate power and they want a bigger government to keep corporate power in check, I mean, are they winning over this last year? What have they got? They've got corporations with more power than they had before all of this extra, you know, layers of government have been added over the last year, right? So it's important to recognize the distinction between what some people's goals are and whether or not they're actually getting what they want. And a lot of these groups on the left are not getting what they want at all. They're getting screwed over by this whole thing. So anyway, this wasn't the story I was leading into before, but maybe I'll just bring this up first. But I just thought it was so funny. The day after I had Ben Burgess on the show, I see the CNN article that was here. Let me read the title of it. But it was just perfect timing, literally the next day. The CNN article says, concerns mount that U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan could risk progress on women's rights. So there you go. Is that the left winning? Is that an anti-war leftist? You know, like,
they didn't need a mask policy because they were already wearing burkas. Women are actually fully safe in that country.
Yeah, there you go. It's probably actually good for the spread of COVID, right? But you see my point there where it's like, oh, okay, so in the same way that under, you know, George W. Bush, they might push the war in Afghanistan as, well, we need to take out the Al-Qaeda's hideout and we need to fight the Taliban because they partnered up with Al-Qaeda, or whatever the justification that would make a George W. Bush voter satisfied with the war in Afghanistan. Well, now they're just using a justification that will make a Democratic voter satisfied with it. But it's the same corporate interests. It's the same warfare state. It's just now they're using a woke justification to keep their war going.
It's just new propaganda. It's we need to liberate women in other countries.
Yeah, so right, exactly. And so I'm just making the point that it's like, I think that far too many right wingers almost take the woke shit at face value. So they'll go like, oh my God, the left has so taken over our government that now we're trying to impose feminism across the world. Or, you know, it was like there was that one thing in one of the COVID packages that had that money for like gender studies in Pakistan. But then when you actually look into it, it was all just like CIA operations. Like it. So my point is that it's not that don't take it at face value. It's the same old game. This is just the latest excuse for the empire. Oh, well, we're really there because of, you know, women's rights. Which, by the way, the forces who are fighting against the Taliban do generally tend to be better on some issues of women's rights. Like, they're okay. Like, the Taliban doesn't let girls go to school and shit like that. And they're real harsh on women. But the forces countering the Taliban, you know, they have a real problem with raping little boys. So it's not as if you can sit there and say like, oh, well, it's just about women's rights. It's like, yeah, there's really no good guys in this fight. And this is all just a bullshit excuse to keep troops there, which Biden is going to do. He's not going to pull out of the war. The truth is that the vast majority of the American people want us out of Afghanistan, and we're not going to leave. So here's their way of dealing with that. Well, it's just because we're so woke.
Also, is not going to school really anti, like, what are you doing with your school education out there anyways? They're just saving you the hassle of not getting a job. You know, you can learn
I used to love a day off. So really, the Taliban is giving these little girls just tons of days off. Lots and lots of days off for these little girls.
But I'm sure if they want to remain in Afghanistan for this objective of women rights, they must have a pretty good plan for how the military is going to institute more right. women rights in Afghanistan.
Right, right. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Cuts Clothing. Fellas, the sport of business means demanding excellence from your craft and your wardrobe. Your fits need to be versatile, blending timeless style and comfort so that you look as good as you feel. For that, there is Cuts Clothing. They've taken a classic men's fashion staple, the plain tee, and refined it, combined premium quality with a minimalist aesthetic. Cuts shirts, polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts are made for the man who works hard, plays hard, and never settles for less, all in the sport of business. There's been a lot of people over the last year when they're, you know, you're doing meetings on Zoom and things like that, and you're like, I don't know exactly what to wear. You know, you don't want to go in a suit and tie, but you want to look good. Cuts Clothing is perfect for that. And just in general, I think a lot of guys, I know I'm in this position, where nowadays, you know, people dress a little bit more casual, but you also want to look professional at the same time. You want just like a nice quality t-shirt. You want just like a nice quality sweatshirt that you could wear out on a date. You could wear to the office. You can wear, you know, everything in between. That's what Cuts Clothing is all about. In 2016, Cuts founder Steve Borelli set out to create clothes ready for every occasion the modern man faces. He started by reinventing the t-shirt. The perfect t-shirt was accomplished. Next, Cuts set out to create fabric uniquely engineered for each clothing style. The new Cuts hoodie, where they developed a Hyperloop French Terry fabric, a textile that's temperature controlled and ageless. You'll never need to take it off, and you certainly won't want to. They have the wrinkle-free Pika Polo, a design that keeps you fitted for the office, the golf course, at home, the gym, or your next hot date. Each piece of clothing is designed with custom engineered fabric, expertly graded for the perfect fit, arming you for every challenge and opportunity. It's not just a lifestyle. It's not just clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. And you can get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/POTP. That's cutsclothing.com/POTP for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Check it out. Highly recommend it. They have great stuff. cutsclothing.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. Okay, so let's to the other story that really did catch my eye. And I do think this is all somewhat related. But because it all kind of fits into this broader theme. So first of all, I'm instituting a new policy on this show. No more criticizing AOC. AOC is wonderful and she is great and she's doing the Lord's work. And I do not want any police showing up at my door. So keep up the good work, AOC. All right. Anyway.
She's a good dancer.
So, yeah, there you go. Excellent. Unbelievably talented. Must have gone to school for it. So, AOC, I don't know if you heard about this story, but there was this podcaster in California who got the cops showed up to his door after he was critical of AOC. Now, there's a lot of different threads to this story that make it terrifying and interesting. But the one that I wanted to start with that kind of connects to all of the other stuff that we're saying here is that what this guy was not a libertarian or a right winger or somebody who was like AOC wants to spend $30 trillion or AOC wants to impose this Green New Deal on us or something like that. That was not the line of critique that this guy was launching at her. This was a left winger who was upset that AOC did not speak out for Palestinian rights when she was asked a question about it recently. I don't know if you saw the clip of her, of what she said. Did you see any of that? It was just pure fluff and dumbness. I mean, it was like it was an AOC type answer, but she got asked about the Israel-Palestinian conflict. And you could understand where a lot of people who, you know, AOC was really built up as the champion of the left. So a lot of people on the left would want her to take that opportunity to say something about the rights of Palestinians. And instead, she gave a real AOC, just a complete nothing answer that makes it obvious to any thinking
person. Everybody should have the resources that they need for a good life everywhere.
I mean, you're not far off. Like, yeah, even though you didn't see the clip, the actual clip itself was something like, she goes, you know, I think too often we focus on the what and we don't focus on the how and the why. And I think what's important is that everybody has the right to flourish and be happy. And that's really what we need to. But, you know, it was like to anyone with a brain listening to it, it was just like, oh, okay, you don't know anything. You don't know anything about this situation. That's what's going on here. So, okay. But if you're a lefty who was expecting AOC to be like your champion, you could understand being pretty disappointed with that. I mean, AOC has, I mean, look, she's just one congresswoman, right? But she has made herself, I mean, debatably the most famous person in Congress. In terms of a platform, she has as big a platform as just about any political figure in America has today. Like, if AOC says something, it's going to be news. And honestly, I think it's impressive. It's impressive that she's gotten herself to that point. Now, of course, she probably hasn't done it alone. She's had help. But it's pretty goddamn remarkable. I mean, the woman is younger than both of us. She went from being a waitress to being a congresswoman and maybe the most famous congressperson in the country. That's like unbelievable when you think about it. But what she's had to deal with a lot over the last year is that there has been this group. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not as loud as the woke lefties. It's not as loud as the anti-Trump lefties. But there has been a group of left-leaning people. Or not even left-leaning, like full, you know, very left people who have started to get pretty critical of her. And I think that a lot of it, whether they're saying exactly the same things that I've been saying or not, a lot of it is that they're picking up on that scent. That they're like, hey, but what here are we actually getting? How are we winning? Like, what, you know, I know Jimmy Dore was super critical of her for not pushing Medicare for All. And for not pushing for a higher minimum wage and all of these other policies. And it's like, yeah, I could understand, like, if you're on the left and you've got AOC there, you're like, well, what is the point of having her there if she's not fighting for these policies that we want to see? Like, that's kind of the whole thing. And then you realize that she's basically just, you know, voting for all the corporate welfare and all this other stuff and falling in line. And even she was out there. I don't know. Did you see when she was saying the thing about how, like, what Biden's doing at the border can't be compared to Trump. It's like, oh, it's not nearly as bad as that. I mean, you know, she's like, look, the whole immigration system has problems, but we can't compare what Biden's doing to children in facilities with Donald Trump's kids in cages. It's nothing alike, you know, like, so she's carrying water for the Democrats.
Isn't the situation right now much worse for kids?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh,
okay.
But yeah, but not according to AOC. So, anyway, so this
guy was too busy fake crying down there to actually see what was going on.
Now, this guy was critical of her, and the cops showed up to his door. So just obviously this is just one little example, but just another thing. I mean, the CNN article about Afghanistan is not one little example. That's a pretty major example. Like, we're keeping the longest war in American history going on woke, you know, justifications. But here you have a real left winger who is upset for a real legitimate left wing reason that your supposed progressive champion is not championing Palestinian rights, okay? And for that, AOC has the government showing up at his door. Now, AOC claims that they had nothing to do with it, just to full disclosure. She said, you know, her people were like, we're looking into it or whatever. But he was accused, or at least he claims, by the cops of threatening AOC. But the issue is that there's no evidence anywhere that he threatened her. He just said he just was criticizing her. And that's in itself pretty creepy. But there's more levels that are creepy to it. Evidently, it was the Capitol Police who sent the I guess it was California, some the cops in California. So the Capitol Police had sent them to go harass this guy. And what's even creepier about than that is that he doesn't have any of his information posted on social media. So there's this big looming question as to how they got his address. And some people have speculated that Twitter was working with the authorities or something like that, that they gave him up. So all of this shit comes down to be a very creepy, you know, situation. But it's something that I think is worth, just for all of us, it's worth.
Is this podcast audio only?
I don't know.
Because they got facial recognition software. They might want to pretend like they're not using it, but to take the us and put us up against our Facebook or Instagrams or Twitters or wherever we've been publicly and match the name is not that difficult. And you just got to go into your records, and you don't drive because you're too old to do that. But most people have licenses, so they can find your address pretty easy. In my case, they're showing up at my parents' house, which is just fun.
Oh, yeah. Screw them. You're fine. Go harass my parents all day long.
What were the exact...
Rob's Jewish parents? Those cops will get more harassed than Rob's parents will. Like, come on in, have a nosh.
What were the exact orders? I mean, you probably don't know this of the cops that showed up at that door, because I would think if you're making the claim that there's a legitimate threat, I don't think you get to just visit the guy. Don't you have to actually pull him in?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know those details about it, but what I know enough of, right, is that it's the Capitol Police talking about a threat to AOC. And the thing to notice here is that what they're doing, right, is connecting the January 6th thing to threats against a sitting member of Congress, blah, blah, blah. But what's interesting is that here it is, and this is something, look, it's worthwhile just for us to all know this and recognize it. And it's also worthwhile to at least try to explain this to some people on the left. That look, here's how it's actually being used in practice. It's not just like, oh, Trump supporters are demonized, so we're going to go after them. The state doesn't, you know, the motivations aren't like, well, let me crush this one political group who's a threat to our power. They're going to want to crush anybody who's a threat to their power. So that's something for all those left-wing revolutionaries to keep in mind. You will also be caught in the crosshairs of this stuff. And I do have to say, just on a personal level, yeah, it's pretty damn creepy. The idea that, like, oh shit, like, now they'll just be going after random podcasters who criticize politicians. Our days are numbered, Rob. This is This is this whole thing feels a little bit more dangerous than it used to.
And you got to almost think how ballsy that is on the government side. That if I haven't listened to the audio, but if the audio doesn't do anything that any reasonable person could say is a threat to AOC, because even if you were to say on a podcast, hey, I plan on doing blank violent actions to blank, like even that's words on a podcast. Even that you'd have to show up in court and go, hey, was this comedian being truthful? Well, no. I mean, go look at Bill Hicks bits where he's describing doing violent things to people. Like that's not that is not a call for violence. But if you don't even have that, then you're very far removed from a claim. It's almost a question of how do you present what your actions as not being harassment when you show up at someone's door and go, hey, I'm here with a gun because I want to let you know I felt threatened by what you did there.
Yeah. And there's something it's really, you know, the idea that this a sitting congresswoman and the police are coming over here because they are concerned about your potential for violence or something like that is pretty I don't know, it's pretty hilarious. It's just everything is so upside down in that equation. Like you're the only ones here who are implicitly threatening violence are you guys. Yeah, the whole thing is pretty creepy. I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback from the podcast with Ben Burgess, and I hope people go out and buy his book. I really enjoyed it. It's interesting to see how this all goes and how so much of it is like this whole apparatus is not only not serving the left, but in many cases being turned on the good parts of the left. And certainly being turned on the right as well. And so it's a creepy world that we're living in. I mean, so many of the things that we're like just witnessing happening right now are, if it was over a year ago, you know, as we've said many times, this would just be the stuff of conspiracy theorists. I mean, how you would be like, this is the most wild story ever. This belongs this probably wouldn't even make it onto Alex Jones' show. This is just too bizarre, but it's all happening.
Just
it's
wait till we go to war with Iran for gay rights.
Yeah, right. First,
we're not concerned about the nuclear bombs anymore, but we're really concerned about their gay population that has to be closeted.
Yeah, we have to drop bombs over microaggressions or something like that, right? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So yeah, pretty wild stuff. I've also, you know, found it fun. That, you know, I can have Ben Burgess on the show and have a really friendly conversation with him and really basically agree. Pretty much the whole time, like we've battled it out before, but on this one, like we're pretty much on the same page for almost the whole thing. Obviously, we have differences of opinion, but I don't get any heat for it. There's nobody, no libertarians have criticized me for having a democratic socialist on and being too chummy with him or whatever. It's only the ones on the right who you have a problem with. It's real interesting some of the hierarchy of values that many libertarians have, where they'll flip out. If you have someone on who they label as racist, that's a huge problem. But if you have a democratic socialist on, you're like, oh, yeah, nope. No issue there. No one's concerned that you're too friendly with him or that you're promoting the you know, the people who listen to Ben Burgess join the Libertarian Party or something like that. It's just, nope, get none of it. It only seems to go in one direction. And that's pretty revealing. Those people are really telling on themselves. They have their own justifications that goes like, well, at least he's not a racist. Or you're like, how by any libertarian logic is being a democratic socialist not worse than being racist? I mean, I'm sure you could think both of them are bad, but one involves the government. One involves violating the non-aggression principle, and the other one doesn't necessarily. There's something really funny about, like, when you have the different schools on the left, it's really much more enjoyable to have a conversation with the kind of economic leftists, even like a commie. If they're really concerned with economic issues, you can at least have a conversation with them. Whereas the woke critical race theory types, It's just like impossible. And I don't know, you know, I've seen some libertarians ask the question, like, who's truly more dangerous? You know, like a critical race theory wokester or a commie? And it's debatable. I mean, you know, it's really just a matter of how much power they have. Right now, the woke guys have a lot more power because they're a lot more useful to the corporate power. And that's why. Commies are a little bit more of a threat to corporate power because they don't really think it should exist. And they'd like to see it, you know, like to see that shit taken down. Whereas the, you know, the kind of woke left is perfectly happy as long as you kind of spout the talking points. And so that's much easier to play ball with. And that's kind of how it happens all the time. Like, there's a reason why, like, guys like Keynes or Rawls or some of these guys who are completely just completely backed by the establishment and everyone, you know, like everyone throughout the entire, you know, ruling elite cathedral will hold them up as these brilliant thinkers. A lot of that is just because they justify them having more power. They love that. There's nothing that the establishment loves more than an intellectual who justifies their power. They're like, oh yeah, see, it's not that, you know, we're robbing from the American people to just give all of this, you know, money to our corporate donors. No, we just believe in Keynesian economics, right? So it's, oh no, it's just, look, we have this intellectual guy here who justified it. Now, don't think for a second that there's any politicians out there who, like, sat down and read Mises, Hayek, and Keynes and just decided that Keynes made superior arguments. They're Keynesians because Keynes gives them a justification to have more power. And that's how it happens with all of these things. And that's why they prefer the woke shit over the, like, economic populist stuff. But don't get it twisted. I mean, I like Ben Burgess a lot. He's a good dude, and I enjoyed his book, and I enjoyed the conversation. But, like, yeah, if a democratic socialist or a communist or something like that ever got, you know, control of our agriculture department, we might all starve to death. So that's pretty bad, you know? Like, that's a threat.
But at least they're starting to realize that Louis should be allowed to jerk off in front of people. So
they are,
progress.
They are getting better on Louis' right to jerk off. There's no question about that. You have to give him credit. But look, right? So if a commie gets control of your agricultural department, you're in a lot of trouble. And, like, really, really serious trouble. Like, you will starve to death, okay? And likewise, if a, you know, critical race theorist gets control of your Justice Department, you might be locked up for hate speech. You know, like, they're all real threats. The only question really is how much power they have. However, aside from that, in terms of just having a conversation, it is much more enjoyable to talk to a commie than a critical race theory woke dude. Just much more enjoyable.
Well, the critical...
You can talk to them at least. You can at least have a conversation. Like, the critical race theorist will just tell you conversations are racist. You know, it's like they don't even feel the need to have arguments. The Marxists at least have arguments, even if some of them suck. Sorry, you were saying?
No, I was about to say what you said, which is that the critical race theory don't actually have, they're not even interested in having an argument or having a conversation because it's already baked in that, like, I don't know, there's a propaganda element to what they're doing where they just want to push their agenda and they're shelving logic and reason under the basis that logic and reason only propagate the power of white people. And they don't actually think they believe that to be true. I just think that they see that they have an agenda for how they can forward their movement, which is let's not engage in discussions about logic or reasoning because that's how we're going to get power. But like you said, or it doesn't really work because what happens when the other side does that back to you?
Well, it's one of the things that's really infuriating about postmodernism, critical theory, wokeism, all this shit, is that they just, like, at least the Marxists will try to justify their contradictions, whereas the postmodernist woke critical race theorist type, they just have no problem with their performative contradictions. They're just like,
contradictions are only a construct of white men.
Well, they will straight up say that there is no such thing as objective truth, which is in itself a contradiction. Like, it's a truth claim. It's a claim that this is what's true. There's no such thing as truth. So if there's no such thing as truth, then you can't make the claim there's no such thing as truth, because that's claiming that that's the truth, right? And so they just don't care about any of this stuff. So it's impossible to even engage with a lot of them in these type of, you know, conversations, because, right, they just reject the idea that conversation can even be anything, or that arguments can be anything, yet they'll still make their own arguments. So in practice, it turns into, I'm allowed to make whatever arguments I want. You can't counter any of my arguments, because that's just racism. And so it's this really disgusting naked power play that makes it, unfortunately, makes it almost impossible, particularly when people are really deep into it, makes it almost impossible to engage with them. Whereas Marxists have a claim that relies on there being truth. They make lots of claims that rely on the idea that, yeah, there is objective reality and we are living in and there is objective truth. And they're making these claims, so you can at least argue with them that everything comes down to class struggle or whatever, you know, like all these different things. Like, you can argue that. Whereas it's like impossible with the other guys. So, you know, I don't really want any of them having power, but I know who I'd much rather do a podcast with. So there's that. All right, guys, let's take a second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is IPVanish. Very happy to have them back on the show. IPVanish has been a longtime sponsor of ours. Great to have them back with us. Let me tell you about IPVanish. If you care about the security of your online activity, the easiest way to protect yourself is with an IPVanish VPN. Rated 4.5 out of 5 on Trustpilot, IPVanish provides an encrypted connection for all of your internet traffic, helping to prevent websites, Wi-Fi providers, and even hackers from intercepting your data. You can keep financial details, personal information, and online activity safe from threats with IPVanish. Get started with this limited-time offer and save 50% off the monthly and annual subscriptions by going to ipvanish.com/problem. One more time, that's ipvanish.com/problem, all lowercase. It's really important today to protect your online privacy. It's only going to become more and more important. I highly recommend you check this out, ipvanish.com/problem. All right, let's get back on the show. All right, so switching gears a little bit, let's check in with our favorite little piggy, who, as we love to you know, make fun of media propaganda. This was something that I saw the other day. This clip was going viral. It was really something, really just fucking hilarious and worth sharing with you guys. So let's check in with our favorite little piggy over at CNN, Brian Stelter.
It's really important to see all these TV anchors, personalities, showing themselves getting the shot. We've seen a lot of vaccine selfies from lots of folks at lots of different networks. It's been really inspiring to see. You know, the Today Show even brought the co-host outside for a live group vaccination this week. And Rachel Maddow on Friday on MSNBC talked about how she was really fearful of the needle, really worried about it. And yet it was important to get the shot, and she did. And there she is talking about it on air. So,
Brian, can you pause for one sec? Point.
Where are Tucker and Sean Hannity?
Yeah. Right, just bring it back a little bit, and when we play again, go ahead, Rob.
He's basically just describing, hey, as the cable news network, we're in the business of propaganda, and one of the projects right now is working for the pharmaceutical companies.
Dude, it's so it's so funny. And listen, I know that there are some people who give me shit sometimes because I just like harp on just the propaganda of the mainstream media or the corporate press. But listen, man, this is why I think it's worth doing. Number one, it's entertaining as shit to just fucking watch how it all works. And I am first and foremost an entertainer. But second of all, it's like this is my counter propaganda, that you need to be inundated with how full of shit these people are. Dude, Brian Stelter is the guy who's in charge. Like, his role there is being the media watchdog. That's his role, is that he's supposed to critique the rest of them. Like, their job is to hold the politicians' feet to the fire, and his job is to hold their feet to the fire. And he just opens up with how great they are because they're doing this propaganda campaign for a government shot in your arm. Not a government shot in your arm, but for big pharma shot in your arm that, you know, all the government, basically. No, by the way, one of the funniest things of the first part that we saw is that he shows his own face on there. Because he goes, look at all these wonderful people in the media getting the shot. And then it's just him up there. He's like, yeah, that guy's fantastic. I mean, like, holy shit. Are these guys, the egos on these guys are just unbelievable.
Reporting on this might be, hey, why is it that a lot of the country is still reluctant to get it? That would be a good journalist question.
Real.
What is it that's making people uncomfortable? And then you could do some investigations into...
Yeah, man. And this is what we were saying, which is funny because it's not even good propaganda, like, which is one of the funny and really creepy things about a lot of stuff over the last year is that it's like, oh, you guys aren't even really trying to propagandize everyone. You're trying to propagandize the ones who you think you can reach against the rest of us. Because, you know, like we said after the election, I'm like, well, if you have tens of millions of people who don't believe the election was legitimate, and you think that's objectively false and it was legitimate, what you'd want to do is say, well, hey, what are the reasons that you feel that way? And let me try to demonstrate why your concerns are not founded, you know? And here, don't worry, I can alleviate some of these concerns by demonstrating this to you. Same with this vaccine. I mean, if there's all these people who are hesitant, you'd want to, you know, kind of deal with that, deal with their concerns. Well, why is it that they're so concerned? What are the reasons why they shouldn't be so concerned? Like, let's get into all of that. That would be like an adult doing adult things. This is quite different. And it's really something. First, like I said, the unbelievable narcissism, you know, just to talk about how great you and your field is with your own face up there. Also, by the way, the underlying assumption of this whole thing being that people just love the media so much that if they just see Brian Stelter and Rachel Maddow getting the shot, then they'll all be completely comfortable. Like, oh, well, these great truth tellers are doing it, so we should all go and get the shot as well. And the other thing that's just really, it's unbelievable, like, that these, look, these are private companies, you know, they're very in bed with government, but these are private companies. These are big pharmaceutical companies who are raking in ungodly amounts of money off of these vaccines. And here you have, like, on CNN, just blatantly, with no even illusion of neutrality, just sitting here telling you our job is to do propaganda on behalf of these big pharmaceutical companies' products. We are here to push these products. But then it gets even nuttier, which is where we cut it off. It's not just celebrating how great it is that we're all publicly on video taking the vaccines. Here's the second part.
Where are Tucker and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham? Where is Ainsley Earhart and Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade? Where are the biggest stars on Fox getting vaccinated? I get it's a personal choice. I get that's between, you know, the hosts and their healthcare provider. But everybody else is doing it, right, Matt? I mean, all across television, all these anchors are rolling up their sleeves. Why do you think we haven't seen the biggest stars on Fox News get vaccinated or show us their vaccine selfies?
So there you go. It's not just, so he is being a media watchdog, right? Except he's like, how come you guys aren't joining in on the propaganda? I mean, what the hell? With the little caveat, I mean, sure, it's personal medical information and it's your decision whether or not you want to do it. But still, do it and do it on camera in front of everybody. Why have we not seen the biggest stars at Fox News publicly vaccinate themselves in front of everybody? I mean, what a, like, I don't even know what to say. What creepy, naked propaganda? Could there be anything that was more creepy and more naked propaganda than what we just saw? Not like, how come you're not talking about the vaccine or reporting on the vaccine? Why are you not engaged in this performative ritual with the rest of us? Everybody's doing it. That was Brian Stelter's logic. Yes, the logic of the popular eighth grade girl. Everybody's doing it. Why aren't you?
Fox is holding out for better checks, you know, like they haven't gotten their performance bonuses, so they're not going to, you know, do the extra mile of even taking pictures in their personal life.
Yeah,
they
really
keep the propaganda on air.
Like, unbelievable. What a weird thing, if you think about it, to like be demanding that other people let you in on their private medical decisions. And use that in order to, you know, push it on everyone else. I mean, it's very strange. Like, you know, there's tons of problems with Fox News. But, man, I got to say, this is one of the things that I go like, oh, okay. And of course, what they're getting criticized for is one of the few nice things about the network. Like, yeah, they don't have their anchors out there shooting themselves in the arm for this. Again, just like,
well, his take theater. Is. This is supposed to be all hands on board in terms of convincing the American people that they should be getting vaccinated so that we can move on from this virus. Now let's take a step back and go, yeah, but that's the propaganda.
Right.
It was that we needed to take all these drastic draconian measures in order to fight this virus, or that without a lot of research or, you know, information, we're just supposed to take for granted that these shots are a good idea. Right. All of that is the pro, but it's like, to them, it's such a given because they're being paid to go create this propaganda.
It's just like our marching orders have been given by the government and big pharma, and so this is what we're doing. Why are you not on board with this? But to anyone who would consider themselves a journalist, you would have to say, like, well, look, I mean, this is the biggest mass vaccination program in human history, with incredibly short trial periods, with a very new form of vaccine that has not been used on this scale before. Do some goddamn reporting. You don't line up for this this ritual of theater to just show that we are all taking it, no questions asked, because fucking Moderna tells us to. Like, what the fuck is this? That's just incredibly bizarre thing to witness. And, you know, at least one of the nice things is that Brian Stelter is appropriately being roasted online for all of this. People are just tearing him up, which I must say that part of it is pretty great. Pretty great to watch these guys flip out. Okay. What else? There were a couple other things that we wanted to talk about. What else did you have for us, Rob?
I mean, there were a couple of the Biden stories, if you wanted to get into that.
Sure. Yeah. We could get into some of the Biden stuff. Biden's been talking a lot about gun control, because, of course, he wants to unite the country. So what is the issue that you would go after that just unites everybody? Oh, we want to crack down on guns. And of course, you know, you would have to think, right? Again, this is like if you were, even if they were just a little bit smarter about all of this shit, you would think they would go, well, you know, while we're all out there, you know, I mean, you think about like the conspiratorial argument against gun control. Which, by the way, I am unapologetically and always have been in favor of. Like, I, as I've always said, I believe a healthy amount of conspiratorial concern is a good thing. You don't want to have too much of it, but you don't want to have none of it either. And, the idea of like, hey, you don't want to let a government disarm their people, because if that government goes really bad, then you don't have an armed populace to resist them. I am completely in support of that line of thinking. But if ever there were a time where people would be convinced that, holy shit, I mean, the government is literally locking everyone in their homes for most of a year, at least in lots of parts of the country, and they're making everyone get these pricks in their arms with some government vaccine and yada, 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 the other 100 things that have happened over the last year. And now they're trying to take away the guns. Man, if there was ever a time where you were going to meet, you know, huge resistance and divide the country for a guy who ran as his number one mission is to unite the country, just seems like the issue you wouldn't pick.
Yeah, it's also not great timing as he's trying to, like, pass some giant stimulus plans. Yeah. It seems like he's really testing the waters on how much power he can grab. He's got a commission that he's running to see if they can add justices to the Supreme Court or limit terms. He's planning the infrastructure bill, which everything is infrastructure. I'm sure you've seen all the analysis about that, but on top of the infrastructure plan, he's got another giant plan for like health and education. He's looking to bash all spending records. So on top of massive spending, taking a look at the filibuster laws, passing more executive orders on one of the most charged topics, which is gun control. He's also looking, who knows what of these he's going to win, but I'm telling you, he's really dipping his toe in water of like how much power can the president grab? And by the way, it's not even him because he's half dead. So it's whoever's, puppet mastering Joe Biden. They're really testing the waters on what they can get away with.
Yeah. And I gotta say, it's not just that with the gun issue, there's a couple different factors involved here, but obviously to me, the biggest one is the fact that the governors all over this country have just shredded the Bill of Rights over the last year. And to not be concerned about that at all, and to think that going hand in hand with disarming the population, and I don't care, even if you're just talking about taking away their AR-15s or whatever, I don't care. I mean, that's taking away a tool of meaningful resistance, you know? So that's always first and foremost, like, man, this is, if ever there was a time when you wanted to make sure that the society was as well-armed as possible, this would be the time. But in addition to that, you know, there were also these huge riots over last summer. And I don't know if you saw or you're keeping up with this, but there were just more riots that broke out in Minnesota because there was another shooting of cops shooting some black guy. I don't know the details of the shooting, so and I try not to comment on these things until a lot of details are out and we actually know what happened, because I think, frankly, a lot of people make asses out of themselves when they pick a narrative before we know what happened. But you know, we've seen all over the country where there's been these huge riots and the cops will back off and not do anything to protect people and their property.
Your story, your problem.
Right. And so at the same time, now the government is going to be going in there and, making it harder for people to get guns or limit what type of guns they can get. Now, this is a recipe for a real bad situation. It is what I don't even know. I can't remember who came up with the term, but it really is the anarcho-tyranny model, where there are all of these rules for some groups of people and then absolute lawlessness for others. And so, you know, and then it's also very easy to propagandize so much of this stuff. So like in areas like I know in parts of California, I can't remember if this was San Diego or San Francisco, but where they'd have all of these type of like decriminalization of different things. And some of it, me and you would probably support. Like the cops just aren't going to be as harsh on all of these petty crimes. But then they'd also have crimes like if you shoplift something under $500, you're not going to be prosecuted for it. Now, theoretically, you could still be arrested for it, but in practice, what ends up happening? Are they really going to be making these arrests when they're just letting the guys go anyway, you know? However, like if you're a store owner and you have a gun and you use it to defend your property when someone comes in to shoplift from you and they deem that it wasn't in legitimate self-defense, you are going to be prosecuted. So it's this perversion almost of the like kind of anarchist model of like, oh, well, we don't need to have the state regulating every single one of these things. And instead, it's like, oh, no. And this is what we saw all last year, right? that these rioters will, for the most part, be completely allowed to do what they want to do. But if you are a property owner and you come out with a gun to defend your property, ooh, you better, you know, you better cross your T's and dot your I's, because if you do one little thing wrong, you are going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And that, the mix of that is just a recipe for a nightmare, just a disastrous society where things are going to get violent and really out of control. And so
I think, you know, since the left seems to feel that, you know, cops are racist, it's probably really important that, you know, everyone else has guns, because why would we want the only people in society with guns to be these racists? That's not a good plan.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Really. I mean, it's like, it's, but you know, it's funny because this is the problem is that this is when your issue isn't, police violence, when the issue isn't statism, but it's racism instead, you end up being able to, you know, to funnel these, the outrage into lots of unhelpful areas. So yeah, it's like, there seems to be no outrage, you know, like when there was that couple who came out on their property with their guns drawn.
What ended up happening to them?
I don't know. Last I heard they were being prosecuted, but I don't know. But none of the anti-police crowd seemed concerned that, like, they were arrested by cops the next day or 2 days later. No one seemed concerned about that, right? Like, that's not an issue because they're like the rich guys with, and they're white, and they're, it's like they don't fit the narrative. But literally all they did was walk out onto their property with guns. You know, like when an angry mob was storming their like little private gated community. So anyway, I mean, if nothing else, I would hope that people would see this is it's a recipe for disaster. This is going to be very bad. It's not going to work out well. So, you know, something to keep in mind. All right. Is that it? All right. I think we'll wrap there, brother. It was a good one. I appreciate you. Come see us at Pork Fest. Come see me in Pittsburgh. Come see me at Freedom Fest. Rob, you're going to do Childeberg still?
Hell yeah, Texas.
There you go, my brother. And yeah, check out Rob's podcast, Run Your Mouth. Follow him on Twitter, @RobbieTheFire. Thanks for listening. See you soon. Peace.